KRWG's Gardening Confidential is brought to you by Las Cruces Home Builders Association. The 2019 Home and Garden Show, presented by SunTech Services, Incorporated, Saturday, April 13th from 9 a.m. to 5 p.m., and Sunday, April 14th from 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. at the New Mexico Farm and Ranch Museum. Hi, I'm Edmundo Resendez as we enter hour number two of KRWG's Gardening Confidential. Call in right now at 575-646-2212, 575-646-2212, or join us on social media where we are live streaming the show on Facebook. Special treat during the news. The folks on social media were able to ask questions and we were able to answer them, so web exclusive. Jeff Anderson with the Cooperative Extension Service at New Mexico State University is our special guest, and he is here to offer tips to be a successful gardener in our region. All calls and social media questions will be entered into a drawing to win a $25 gift certificate courtesy of Guzman's Color Your World Garden Centers with two locations in Las Cruces. Thank you to Gary Guzman for doing their part to support public media in our region. Let us go to Cruz. Cruz, you are on with Jeff. What's on your mind, Cruz? Thank you very much for waiting.
Hey, no problem at all. I was calling in because you guys had a little spill right there about using glass for landscaping, and the city of Las Cruces crushes a different color glass and all. Now, do they take down the sharp edges off of it, or how is that glass repaired, or what is it to be used outside? Because I've got kids, and my worry about using the glass would be the sharp edges around it if they fall down on top of the glass or whatever.
You know, you're true and right there. So the glass is not necessarily tumbled. It's crushed, and it's up to you to decide what's with the glass and how to use it effectively and appropriately in a yard. I have walked on it barefoot, and I haven't had any problem. I went digging in it with my bare hands, and I did cut my finger a bit on that. So it does have some sharp edges on it.
Okay, now, do you have to be a resident of Las Cruces also in order to get some of that glass, or what? Because I live in Silver City myself, and I'd be interested in trying to use some of that glass for landscaping up here. And, you know, Silver City, we're really small, so we don't have any facilities like that whatsoever. So would I have to be a resident of Las Cruces to get it, or would I be able to go down there and pick it up and buy the trailer full?
At the moment, there's no restrictions on getting the glass. It's just, if it's available, it's open there for anybody to take.
Where could they go get it?
The glass is on West Amador at the Jacob Hand treatment plant, the West dump out there, recycles, all of that's out there.
All right.
Okay.
Cruz, thank you very much for listening.
Thank you.
All right. 575-646-2212. 575-646-2212. We are in hour number two of KRWG's Gardening Confidential. Thank you to all of those that have called in. You are entered into a drawing to win a $25 gift certificate to Guzman's Color Your World. Let us go to John. John, welcome. You are on with Jeff.
Hello, Jeff. This is John, and I'm questioning, how do you keep pinyon trees full and healthy looking? Most of them I see, you start off pretty good, and then you just watch over a year or two, and they kind of dwindle and get thinner and thinner, and eventually they kind of die.
So there's multiple reasons why they die out. Generally, they're native to about 6,000 to 7,000 foot elevation. They get a little more water. So paying attention to water is very important in Las Cruces here, as well as other areas like Alamogordo or El Paso. You have to pay attention. You have to get the tree established. And a lot of them were dug from the wild, so their roots got cut off. They have to make that transition and adapt. So they can also have, some of the older plantations may have borers in them. So we have bark beetles and borers that have moved in, and they'll start attacking them. There's also a pinion needle scale that causes the needles to fall off every year. So if you have pinion needle scale, even at this time of year, what you can do is look at the needles. If you find little black dots, they're really tiny on the scales. You almost need a hand lens to look at them. And that's generally the scale from last year. So coming up pretty soon here, maybe in April or so, they'll have a swarm either the end of March or into April. They get a swarm where they crawl down the trunk and people say, what's that flowing down the trunk? That's them. So if you treat the tree for that, and I know a lot of people don't like to use insecticides, but there are certain things that if you want to wipe out a bad insect like borers or bark beetles or pinion scale that might be killing the tree, sometimes you have to resort to a systemic insecticide.
All right, okay, thank you, John. Do you have something to follow
up? Is there any other insecticide that would affect the tree? Can I just use what I buy and spray around for bugs around here?
No, they don't work the same way. You can use a dormant oil spray on the tree as well to try and smother them with the oil, but you got to read all directions and follow labels very carefully.
And where do you buy that at? Is that at a garden store?
Color Your World carries these products.
Oh, okay.
Like the dormant oil, yes.
Okay, thank you very much.
All right, good luck, John. 575-646-2212. 575-646-2212. Let us go to Patty. Patty, you are on with Jeff on KRWG's Gardening Confidential.
Okay, thank you for taking my call. I wanted to comment on the glass from the city. I just love it. And the first time I ever saw it in someone's yard, I used to walk my dog and I thought, is that like a deterrent for the animals? That couldn't be good for them. But I have it in my yard, and I have pets, and I've never had a problem with it being sharp or anything. I was amazed of how great it looks, and it's not sharp at all. So I wanted to comment on that. Now, I've lived in a lot of desert cities, mostly hotter, like Tucson, Palm Springs. And so this is the first place I've lived where it freezes. But every desert city I've lived in, I've always had canna lilies. Canna lilies.
Yeah, canna lilies.
I had a hard time getting that out there. But and they always do really well, and they just take off so easily. But here especially, they grow like 7 feet tall. I think I bought one bag of the, what are they, tubers?
Rhizomes.
The red one?
Right.
Yeah, and I just keep splitting them and replanting them and giving them away, and they just won't quit growing. And I've never had them be this tall before. But what I'm wondering is, first of all, if I got some other species, are they all going to do that well? As the red ones that I have, I can't remember what it's called, the typical bright red ones. But and is there something that you're supposed to do, like the following year, to make sure they flower again?
Yeah, I'd give you some tips on them. You may have Red Emperor, the big one.
Yeah, that's it.
Okay, so those particular varieties grow 12, 14 feet tall under good conditions. So if you have good garden soil that's rich in nutrients, and then they get the right amount of water, plenty of it, they're going to grow really big. So that's kind of a problem when you have these really big cannas like that. There's actually one called Musifolia, grows 20 feet tall. But for the gardens, most of us want smaller ones. So we get, like, there's a Futurity, I think, series, and there's some other series of dwarf ones. And all the cannas pretty much grow the same here, no matter what. They like that rich composted soil with plenty of water, and then they do really well. The biggest problem we have here is our dry air, and we have salts in our water, so sometimes you get some leaf edge burn. So you want to keep water off of the leaves and just keep it at ground level. Okay?
Does that help?
Oh, okay, well, and then what about, are you supposed to do something to make them, to make sure they flower again?
Yeah, just like keep the soil rich. I've used biosolids from the sewage treatment plant that's full of all the right nutrients. So cannas, you got to dig up every periodically and divide them and reset them and enrich the soil to keep them blooming really well.
Right, but what did you say to use from the sewage treatment?
Right, biosolids. So that's up to you. It's like manure. You can use some other manures as well, steer manure, but make sure they're composted. But the reason I said biosolids is the city gives them away free. They're Class A, and they're rich in iron. They got 10% iron and all the micronutrients.
Now, that's not the compost, though.
No, that's not the compost.
Okay, so if I called them, they would know if I said the biosolids?
Yes, and they're over on the west side of town. The compost is over on the east side of town.
Okay, and then when should I do that? Like right now before everything starts growing?
Right, you should do it. You could do it almost any time of year. I would not recommend May or June when it's 100 some degrees, because fertilizing anything like that is difficult.
Right.
You could actually do it in the winter time too, like in January. That's my big recommendation, because nobody's outside having a party, so you don't get that smell.
The smell.
So January is a perfect time to do it, but anytime you can do it, but don't do too much at a time. You're talking under a half an inch.
All right.
Okay, and how often?
You could do it several times throughout the year. And if you want to keep the odor down, you just dig a hole around it and put a little bit around the whole plant.
Okay. Okay, awesome then.
Thank you very much for joining us. 575-646-2212. 575-646-2212. If you want to join in on the conversation on KRWG's Gardening Confidential, my name is Edmundo Resendez. My guest is Jeff Anderson with the Cooperative Extension Service at New Mexico State University. He is here to answer your gardening questions. Let us go to social media, where we have Michael Kaczmarek. Michael, how are you enjoying this, by the way? Welcome to KRWG and social media desk.
Oh, thank you. It's great. No, it's awesome to see all the comments come through here on social, and so it's great to be the middleman here and to get them to you guys. So, Jeff, I'll let you know that Emmanuel's asking now. He wants to know, how long would it take for grafted apple trees to produce fruit, and is it possible in this climate?
Yes, it's possible to grow apples in this climate and have fruit. So how long does it take? If you buy a grafted apple tree, depends on the size of it. You know, if you were over at Color Your World, you could get a pretty large tree over there, and it's going to start bearing. If it doesn't have apples on it already, it'll have apples on it pretty quickly after, you know, by next year and the year after. If you're starting with like a mail order small tree that you get in, depending on the variety, it could take five to 7 years.
Oh, wow. That's a long time.
Yeah.
I've also got another one from Zyra, who says that she's got a bed garden in which she already plants strawberries. What other edibles could she plant with?
With strawberries?
Yes.
Is she in Las Cruces?
She did not say.
So, you know, if she's doing successful with strawberries, and especially if she was in Las Cruces, I'd say don't plant anything with them, because strawberries are difficult in Cruces here.
Really?
Not impossible. It's so hot and dry. They don't form like they do out east or something where it's cooler. So I wouldn't recommend mixing really anything in with your strawberries.
575-646-2212. Mary, you are on with Jeff Anderson. Welcome to KRWG's Gardening Confidential.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Thank you for being very patient.
You're welcome. I have two Thompson seedless grapevines that are probably about 6 years old, maybe seven. They're growing on an arbor. I'm on the west side. They're in mostly full sun. They were doing really well, but about 2 years ago, I got skeletonizing caterpillars.
Mm-hmm.
And on both vines. And the first year, I treated them with it was billed as a natural remedy,
Bacillus thuringiensis.
Yeah, yeah.
Yes.
But last year they came back. A friend of mine used a systemic spray on mm-hmm. them in the spring. They came back in the summer, there weren't as many. And then at the end of the year, it looked like one of the vines was dying. I've pruned them this year, and one of the vines has vigorous growth, but the one that looked like it's dying, I haven't found any growth on. So any suggestions? I'm thinking about taking the dying one out, but if these come back on the other one, other vine, any suggestions for dealing with caterpillars?
If the bacillus isn't working on that, you could call my office. I could look at see if there's any other organic things that might work with that.
Okay.
But the most effective way, and I hate to endorse chemicals, is 7-SEVIN. It's been used for over 100 years, and, you know, you spray it and they're gone right there.
Mm-hmm.
So it only has a short residual, like about 14 days that it's active. So it's been used for a long time on apples and a lot of fruit crops in the past. But you got to watch out. It's an insecticide, and you could throw spider mite populations if you have them. You can boost those up because spiders are not insects. They're arachnids.
Okay, Mary.
Okay.
Thank you, Mary.
Okay, thanks very much.
Thanks.
575-646-2212. 575-646-2212. It is KRWG's Gardening Confidential. We are in hour number two of our spring edition of KRWG's Gardening Confidential. Jane, you are on with Jeff Anderson. Welcome, Jane.
Hi there. Yes, I'm wondering if I live in Silver City, and I also want to know about canna flowers. And would they grow here? And if so, what kind of soil? And would they need to be trimmed back at all? What would be the care for them?
Okay. I have seen cannas growing all the way up into Colorado, but in very protected areas. So they're tougher because they're below ground. If you're in a real cold area, what you do is you mulch over the top with a thick layer of mulch of leaves, straw, that kind of stuff, and that'll protect them through the winter. You should be able to grow them in Silver City without much of a problem. Just don't plant them on the north side of the house. That's absolutely where it's going to get the coldest because it'll stay in the shadow and stay frozen. But you want to plant them probably towards the south or east side for the best performance.
Okay. Can they stand a hot sun very much?
Yes. As long as they have sufficient water, they hold up about as well as they're going to do here.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
Thank you very much for joining us. 575-646-2212. Jeff, we had the lines all filled up. So for those of you that called in and heard a busy signal, we have open lines right now at 575-646-2212. 575-646-2212. Let us go to Andrea. Andrea, welcome. You're on with Jeff.
Hi, Jeff. It's Andrea, your neighbor. So you're saying how much water the plants need to have and how deep it needs to be, and I think that's probably why I'm always failing in our garden, because we're always trying to conserve water and just giving them drip, you know, to the area, but it's probably not enough. I'm wondering what the regulations are and what you feel about using gray water.
Gray water. So as far as I know, there are guidelines online that you can look at. But there is not a restrictive use of gray water as long as it's not what we call black water. So, but the thing is, if you mix gray water and it's got scummy soap and things like that, you have to at some point dilute it down. Otherwise, your soil is going to keep building up with some kinds of different scums and that. So you got to use the right soaps and detergents if you're going to use it as gray water.
If we use sort of plant-based ones and that sort of thing, then it should probably be an okay thing to do?
It should be fine.
Okay, because I'm hoping to maybe get some better success with that, because, our plants have to be pretty hardy around here to survive.
Right. It's good to use, recycle that water and use it over again. Just got to remember for the public to use the right products that go down the drain, because they end up on your garden. Yeah.
All right, Andrea. Thank you very much.
You.
Good luck.
Thanks. Bye.
575-646-2212. 575-646-2212. You are listening to KRWG's Gardening Confidential. I'm Edmundo Resendez. My guest, special guest, is Jeff Anderson with the Cooperative Extension Service at New Mexico State University. What other services does your extension office offer? Are people able to bring in different plants? Are you able to test soils?
We do not test soils.
Okay.
It's been about 8 or 9 years ago that the university quit testing soils. So nowadays we recommend people go to Ward Laboratories or in Nebraska. You can pick another lab. We've got a list of labs in our office. Not that anybody knows what this one or that one's going to be any different. But
yes,
if you're going to test in the Southwest, you want to test your soils in a Southwest location. Because if you sent it back east, they're going to test it for an acid soil and we're alkaline.
Okay. Marty, you are on with Jeff Anderson. Welcome. What's on your mind, Marty?
Hi. Hey, I have about a dozen pretty big pomegranate trees, and we lose most of our fruit every year to what appears to be leaf-footed bugs.
Right.
We tried cleaning out an overwinter habitat for them, and a couple years ago we tried spraying for them, and nothing seems to kill those suckers off.
I'll tell you, seven will kill them. SEVIN, it does work on them.
And do we have to apply that more than once, or do we just do it right when the fruit is young?
You have to apply it more than one time. You have to monitor for the leaf-footed plant bugs. If you're going to produce pomegranates where you want to have a lot that you can eat, you need to monitor it. So every time you see those bugs come along, you need to monitor, and you need to know their juvenile stage as well. They generally cluster in a juvenile stage, and you got to watch out for that and treat them. Otherwise, they pierce into the fruit, and they inject this bacteria and toxin stuff gets in there, and then you got a rotten pomegranate.
Yeah, they are basically the seed of Satan.
Yeah.
Okay, thank you.
Hey, Marty, good luck. Thank you very much. You know, that's one of the plants I've tried to talk to my wife about planting. We don't have a huge garden space. How difficult is it to grow a pomegranate tree? Do they require a lot of water? Because pomegranates are so yummy. I love pomegranate.
Pomegranates are one of the easiest things to grow around here. And it doesn't seem to matter where you live. It's just a matter of getting the plant established. Once you got it established, they're deep-rooted. They're very drought-tolerant. If you want larger pomegranates, you're going to have to give it a little bit extra water to get those pomegranates to the size. Otherwise, they're all going to be small. The plant will keep on going, keep on thriving here, and they do very, very well.
Let's talk about soil. Mm-hmm. I live off of Highway 70 in Rinconada. What's the difference in the soil there versus the soil in, let's say, Alameda and the soil up on Picacho?
Yeah, it depends on how they were formed. So if you're in Rincon, they're probably formed from the river flowing around. You may have ended up with some sand, or it blew in. Up in Picacho Hills, that's a little more volcanic activity they've had up there, and you've got a lot of rocky and blow sand. Blow sand obviously is going to go in there. And in the valley, like in Las Cruces, you've got the Rio Grande River that whipped around, and so you've got deposits of real heavy clay and some deposits of sand. So you've got a whole range of different types of soils.
575-646-2212. 575-646-2212. We have open phone lines, Jeff, for those of you that have been trying to call in and been getting a busy signal. We have open phone lines so you can ask Jeff Anderson your gardening questions. He's here to offer some tips, some advice, and if you've got, you know, dare I say, stump Jeff, you know, offer the challenge. But let us go to our social media desk where Michael Kaczmarek has been standing by. Michael, what are people saying on social media?
Hey there, guys. I've got a question from Lane who wants to know, do blueberries grow well here inside and also what season?
Blueberries.
Yeah, blueberries grow well inside. You mean like inside the house or just grow here?
He wants to know if they grow well here and if he could grow it inside.
No to the inside one. You don't want to grow them in the house. So they require a winter dormancy period of cold. So you're not going to really want to live in your house with that temperatures of being cold like that. But the big thing with blueberries, they like a pH. That's a soil measurement there of acidity of 4.5. And our soil pH is around 7.8. So it's in completely the opposite direction. What that means is that the plant will not be able to pick up iron properly and other micronutrients, and so it will suffer. So I have actually a blueberry plant growing.
Do you really?
Yeah, I have it in a container. It was a challenge from somebody, being a horticulturalist, and somebody giving you a challenge. So I took them up on it. I'm doing really well with a very large blueberry plant in a 23-inch container. I have gotten fruit.
How do they taste? Are they
The blueberries are much better here, and we have a higher sunlight. And so you want to give the blueberry as much sunlight as possible, and that higher sunlight tends to make more carbohydrates in each of the blueberries, and they're just packed with flavor. I was really surprised. So that's the only reason I have continued to grow the blueberry plant after that challenge.
Okay. Michael, you had another question?
I do, from Teresa, who wants to know, what are good shade trees to plant on the west end of the property to protect her front door and hands in the summer?
It's hard to mention this over and over again, but one of the most popular trees is the Chinese pistache. It is like the perfect tree for this area.
You mentioned this every show.
So what I want to caution on, though, is that you get a male tree. So if you can find a male tree, great. If you can't and you don't know and you don't want to search, get a, one called Keith Davy. It's a male tree because the females will produce fruit. And in Las Cruces, that fruit actually will come up here because that's how well it is adapted here.
Does it really?
Yes. And you have some like Atlas pistaches, and you have red push pistache, which is used as a rootstock for pistachio nuts. So most of the things in the pistache family are excellent drought-tolerant plants, as well as a lot of oaks. Oaks are really good for here, too.
What about – thank you very much, Michael. We'll check back with you in a bit.
No problem.
All right. 575-646-2212. 575-646-2212. Jeff, let's talk about the current the trees that are around campus at New Mexico State University. It's a pretty diverse trees, and they, you know, we've got oak. What are some trees that are found here in our region that are not native to this area that have really taken root in our community?
In a bad way?
In a good way. In a good way and a bad way.
Okay, I'll tell you the bad one first.
Okay.
And that's the tree of heaven, sometimes called the tree of hell.
What is this tree of heaven? How can that be bad?
It's from China. That's not the bad part. It came from China, and it grew so tall it was thought to reach up to the heavens. That's why it was called tree of heaven. But it was brought in the United States because it was the only tree that would grow on mine spoils, toxic mine spoils. So imagine, if this tree could grow on toxic mine spoils, just think how well it grows everywhere else. And that's the problem. It comes up from every seed, and it comes from up every root sucker, produces a whole new forest of trees, and it can withstand an incredible drought. So it's worked to displace a lot of our native things here. And it gets into your sewers and places like that. But Siberian elms are another one that's been really bad. And of course, everybody knows the tamarisk. The salt cedars.
Salt cedars,
yeah.
Yes.
So working trying to control them and kind of get rid of them and plant better adapted trees for this area.
What about the beautiful trees, the good trees?
Beautiful trees. We have far more selections of red buds. That's the first thing that popped into my mind because it's spring and the red buds are blooming. And there's so many more different types that we can choose from. Along with that, we have like Nuevo León rosewood, which is actually native to the Chihuahuan Desert. It's an evergreen tree, very beautiful. Neither one of these trees are very large. And then, of course, like I mentioned before, the oak trees. We have so many beautiful oaks that we can use in this area. Sometimes it's a challenge to find different kinds. I know I've traveled over to Austin, and they have a lot more native plant people there, and they've... they have actually a nice selection of different kind of oaks that actually do very well here.
Okay. 575-646-2212. 575-646-2212. It is KRWG's Gardening Confidential. Jeff Anderson is our guest. He is with the NMSU Extension Service, Cooperative Extension Service. And if you want to join in on the conversation, feel free to do so. All calls and social media questions will be entered into a drawing to win a $25 gift certificate to Guzman's Color Your World. Let us go to our phone lines. Karen, thank you very much for holding. You are on with Jeff. Karen?
I've been doing some weeding out in my front yard, and I'm finding a lot of inactive young grub worms. What's the best way and what's the best time to treat them?
Okay, so the best time to treat grubs actually is in August, and that's when you've got the most babies and they're most susceptible to whatever you're going to apply to them. But we have grubs pretty much all year, and I've seen grubs myself already. If you've really got a lot of bad grubs right now, they're kind of semi-dormant.
Right.
Treating depends on how big an area you have to treat. You know, you can buy GrubX at Lowe's or Home Depot, and it has imidacloprid in it, and it works pretty well if you follow the directions right. But if you had a real bad infestation, you could treat the soil with 7, S-E-V-I-N. So 7, like what was used on the pomegranates for the leaf-footed bugs there. It's an extremely effective thing for, like, the grapes that we talked about with the grape leaf skeletonizers. It's effective against those grubs and caterpillars the most.
All right.
Wow. Does that help?
Yes. Yeah, so you're talking a granular or a spray 7?
You can get the dusting powder, or you can get a granular and sprinkle around. But generally, it's Generally, it's going to be either a liquid or a powder.
Okay. And do I need to wait until they're more active, or will it work when they're in their dormant stage?
It should work right now. It's a contact.
Okay.
All right. Thank you, Karen.
Good
luck.
Thank you very much. Thanks.
All right. 575-646-2212. 575-646-2212. If you want to join in on the conversation on KRWG's Gardening Confidential. Ed, welcome. You're on with Jeff. What's on your mind, Ed?
Hi. I have a pomegranate. It's not too large. It's about 3 or 4 years old since it was planted. I was told it's a Mesilla Valley pomegranate. It gets beautiful orange flowers but has never set any fruit. And I was wondering if you can help with that.
So if it gets beautiful double orange flowers, that's all it's getting?
Yes.
So the double flowers don't generally set fruit. They're more showy. You have to get those female, they're singular looking flowers. There are cultivars of pomegranate out there that are just strictly ornamental, and all they do is flower, once in a while produce a fruit. But if you got it from the Mesilla Valley, it could be a wonderful one, and it may not be just old enough yet to fruit. Mine has been in the ground for several years now, and mine's probably about 6 feet tall, and it still hasn't fruited. But it will in time.
Okay, thank you. So you don't necessarily try to promote the single flowers, but just wait for them.
Yeah, there's not much you can do about that.
Okay, right. Thank you.
All right, thank you, Ed. 575-646-2212. 575-646-2212 if you want to join in on the conversation. We also have Facebook Live where you can join in on the conversation there as well. We've got Michael Kaczmarek standing by the social media desk. Let's go to Robert. Robert, welcome. You are on with Jeff.
Thank you. Thank you very much for taking my call. I'm considering using one of those water bypass systems on my swamp cooler or those water bleed-off systems.
Right.
And is the water that comes off of there, is that something that I can collect and then use to water my garden?
Yes, it is. As long as you don't have anything added to your cooler system, like scale removers and things like that. It's just water. It's good to use that bleed off. It'll help prolong the length of life of your swamp cooler as well by keeping the salts out of there.
Exactly. I just was concerned that maybe the water might have even more salts in it. I've got 12 swamp coolers, and I would like to reuse that water if I'm able anyway.
If you're bleeding it off on a daily basis, it's not going to be a problem. It's just, you know, when it dries and the salts build up and you don't pump it out on a regular basis, that's when the problem would begin.
Very good. All right. Great. Well, then I'll set up my own oasis here up in Tier C.
Okay. Thank you very much, Robert. 575-646-2212. 575-646-2212. Let's go to our phone line where Ben, thank you very much for joining us. You are on with Jeff. Ben?
Hey, Jeff. Thank you for taking the call. I'm just concerned about that nut grass that keeps growing in my yard. It's starting to spread more and more, and I don't know what to do to control it.
Nut grass.
Yeah, nut grass is very difficult. Those little nutlets can grow anywhere from 3 to 4 feet down in the soil. And nut grass doesn't like shade, but if it's in your grass, you know, and it's in the sun, it's going to keep growing back. So it's a very difficult one. There are a few chemicals out there. Generally, it's a matter of hand pulling up, but as soon as you pull the top off, a new shoot comes up and replaces the green, so it's almost impossible to keep after. You may have to look at some chemical options if you have a lot of nut grass.
Okay.
I mean, there is a way around it. It's a lot of work, though. Keep at it. I mean, the easiest way would be to remove the turf and then get rid of the nut grass and then replant. You know, trying to kill it in the grass is difficult.
Okay, Ben. Thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you.
Good luck. 575-646-2212. We've got about 20 minutes to go. If you've got a gardening question and you've been trying to call in before and heard a busy signal, we've got open phone lines. Let us go to Kenny. Kenny, welcome. You are on with Jeff Anderson.
Hi, good afternoon. Thanks for taking my call.
No problem, sir.
So started a compost pile about 3 years ago for all the yard waste, food waste, vegetable waste, so forth. It's been cooking for 3 years, decided, okay, let's try it, let's get some soil out of there, put it in pots, put it in a little greenhouse that they have, planted tomatoes, planted potatoes, planted lettuce, planted arugula, and oh my goodness, I got every conceivable plant that's ever been created for humanity growing at the same time as the stuff I wanted to grow. And I'm assuming it's coming from the compost stuff that seeds got in there. I mean, I've got pumpkins, I've got cucumbers, I've got stuff I don't recognize, and I'm assuming, right, because there's not weeds there, it's good garden soil, but any ideas how I can keep my compost pile going but not have every seed that I ever threw in there start growing?
So if the seeds are surviving, usually it's only tomato seeds that sometimes survive. But if they're surviving, it means that your compost isn't heating up to a high enough temperature for long enough. And so those seeds are surviving a decomposition process, but not high enough temperatures to kill the seeds. So you'd have to find a way for your compost, maybe not enough moisture or something that's going on, that it's just not heating up to the right temperature.
Okay. It's not an enclosed, it's not like a compost barrel. It's a, you know, I dug a shallow pit and
right.
put a fence around it, and that's what I've been throwing in it. And it, like yeah. you said, it does decompose because it never gets deeper than 6 inches.
Yeah, so that's what I do with mine. I chop it up and I put it back in the garden. And so worms and microorganisms come up and they feed on the bottom of it, and they break that down very slowly. But it's not like that's kind of a brush heap composting style. It's not really true composting.
It's not really true composting.
No, it's just letting things naturally decompose in place.
Okay. So if I maybe pay a little more attention to watering it enough, maybe turning it a little more.
Right.
Or do I need to give up with the open thing and go to a more closed?
If you're comfortable with the open, you know, I'm comfortable with it. I water it. It breaks down on a regular basis. Like I said, not as fast as a true compost. It's a decomposition is what you're doing. So microorganisms do decompose it, but it's a slower process.
Okay. All right. So just, like you said, pay attention to a little more, chop stuff up, keep it
right.
watered, and that might take care of the seeds.
So if your pit is like that, then you want to add more water, make sure there's sufficient nitrogen. And sometimes you may have to put a little bit of plastic over it to keep the temperatures in.
Okay.
Especially
right, okay.
in the winter.
Yeah, okay. Appreciate it. Thank you.
All right, Kenny. 575-646-2212. 575-646-2212. You're listening to KRWG's Gardening Confidential. I'm Edmundo Resendez. Our guest is Jeff Anderson. He is here to answer your questions. He is with the Cooperative Extension Service at New Mexico State University. We've got about 16 minutes to go. So if you've got some questions and you want to get in, we've got three open phone lines. Let us go to Eddie. Eddie, thank you very much for joining us. What's on your mind?
Yeah, two questions. First, I have a man that told me that if you chop off the top of a palm tree, it'll still grow, but it'll stay at that height. I want to see if that's a myth or if that's true.
That is totally untrue, because a palm tree, most palm trees only have one growing point, and if you cut it off, that's it, the palm will die. A lot of times people in different places will cut the top of the palm tree and it looks like they cut the top off and it'll come back up or out that bud, and that's because you didn't cut off the bud, but it'll come back out. But that's highly frowned on. But generally, if you cut the top of a palm tree, that's it. It's dead.
Okay, real good. My next question is, I'm trying to get a vegetable garden going for this summer, and I wanted to plant like jalapeno peppers, squash, just some basics like that. So I want to know what I needed to throw in the soil, what kind of soil to get it ready for that. And also right now in that soil, there are some, it's those ground wasps. I'm not sure what you call them, and I want to see how you get rid of those. I heard they're tough to get rid of.
Yes. Yeah, they're tough to get rid of because they're underground, and it's kind of hard to, you know, do anything there.
Yes.
I mean, again, you could try seven, drenching the soil, especially at night where they are at. And that may or may not work because you don't want to get stung. So I guess that would be my suggestion. I'd have to talk with the entomologist if there were any other suggestions. But so you want to start a garden. So you've got, if you, do you have sandy soil? Is that what?
I'm more off the edge, the off the mountain side, so it's a little of everything. Clay, but this is actually I've thrown in good soil, so it's a bed that I've just thrown in a bunch of good soil in there. So, but it's about 8 inches deep.
Okay,
should I make it deeper?
Yeah, you want deeper. You want at least a foot of soil in a raised garden bed. And if it can go down into your own soil and that's pretty decent, that's fine too. Sometimes we don't have decent soil underneath what we when we build a garden bed like that. So
okay.
Sand is, I usually tell people, if you can get builder's wash sand, that is a really great place to start, because then you have a soil structure and you have drainage. And then it's a matter of adding organic matter to it. And there's a lot of different types of organic matter that you can add, certain amounts of bone and blood meal and, you know, different things. But you have to have that looked at. You can do a soil test on that. You can request recommendations of what needs to be added to that. And when you make that request, you say, I want to use all organic process. So then they make the recommendations based on those things that you put into the report.
Who do we send that to, or who do we take that soil sample to?
That the initial soil test, I would say to send it to Ward, WARD Labs in Nebraska. And when that, you can ask for a report back on it. But then we also have our own soil scientist at NMSU who's over in Artesia. And if I have that report, I can send it to him, and he can make recommendations based on being in New Mexico. So it's a little bit of a process, but the one cost you and the NMSU one's free.
Very good. All righty. Well, thank you so much. I appreciate it.
All right.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
All right. Thank you very much. Let's go to our phone line. This is the Rapid Fire phone lines. Leah, you are on with Jeff Anderson. What's on your mind?
Yes, Jeff. Good afternoon. I was wondering what I can do for the aphids on my treadmill.
On your what?
It fits on my crepe myrtle.
Oh, on your crepe myrtle.
Okay, crepe myrtle.
Okay. So if the crepe myrtle is a small bushy type, it's easier to get at, and you can use the soapy water solution on that. But if they're bigger, you could still do that. It's just harder to get up in the air depending on the size of the crepe myrtle. But sometimes spraying it with that systemic insecticide is a one-time deal, and it's over and done.
Leah, thank you very much. Let us go to our social media desk where Michael Kaczmarek has been standing by. Michael, what are people saying on social media?
Hey, guys. I've got a question here from Katrina who says, what's the best way to get rid of natural geraniums? They're taking over my lawn.
Natural geraniums?
What's a natural geranium?
Where is she?
Yeah.
Where does she live?
She didn't mention, so I'm assuming maybe the Las Cruces area.
I would assume more like Silver City, maybe.
Okay. Why is that?
Because just native geraniums just don't take over here. It's not our climate. They like a mountain-type climate with plenty of organic matter, those kind of things. So I can see them spreading out maybe in a sandy soil, but I don't think they'd ever take out here. That'd be really remarkable. But
how can you get rid of them?
If you're going to get rid of them, obviously if they're spreading out a lot, they're more than likely reproducing from seed. You could put down a pre-emergent herbicide to prevent that seed from growing.
Real quick, Katrina just responded that she is in Silver City, so good call, you were right.
Up in the mountains. So you could use a pre-emergent herbicide, or you could use a like Roundup, and I know people hate that name, but Roundup to bring them under control. And the interesting thing about Roundup is when it hits the soil, it's bound to the soil and it doesn't move anywhere. So it's actually a fairly safe chemical when you think of chemicals in the broad spectrum. But the only other way you're going to get rid of them is just, you know, you could try the vinegar. If they're perennial, they're perennial ones, they're going to keep coming back. You're going to have to keep spraying them until you starve them out. So one vinegar spray may kill off the foliage and they'll come back up, and then you have to just keep spraying till you basically starve them out.
All right, you got one more?
Yeah, sure. I got one from Manny who wants to know if you have any details on the hemp conference this year.
Any details?
Hemp conference.
Yeah, I'm working on it. It's going to be May 23rd and 24th at the Farm Ranch Museum. We do have the site up for registration. So I'm pretty sure we're going to get a good turnout. We've got some very interesting topics, not just we're going to have the legal issues, we're going to have cultivation of it, but on Friday we're going to be going over the analytical lab and the medicinal properties. And I think, for me, it's going to be really interesting on the medicinal
side. Where's it going to be held at?
At the Farm Ranch Museum.
All right, where can people get information?
They could get it on our Doniana County Cooperative Extension website. There's a link to the registration there. And
all right,
you should take it right there.
All right, let's go to the phone line. Gail, thank you very much for joining us. What's on your mind, Gail?
I moved to a place that the lawn has not been tended to for over 2 years. And there's a bunch of this. I've been told it's called bunch grass. It comes up in a clump. When I try to dig it up, it's got a monstrous root system. And I want to get all that out, and then I want to plant some kind of grass that, you know, grows nice and thick but doesn't get too tall, because I don't want to have to mow real often. Do you have a recommendation?
Okay, so there's a couple questions there. So if you've got, if you need help getting that grass out, you might want to contact Aggies Without Limits. So it's a student group that does work for $10 an hour. You can arrange for that. And then once you get that all prepared, you make sure there's certain, you know, enough water there. One of the best grasses, I mean, Bermuda grass is used a lot around here. And it's a real appropriate grass for using here. There's one called Zoysia grass. Zoysia is a little harder to get. It looks like Bermuda. Uh-huh. But it grows very slowly, and that's its big drawback, is that it grows really slowly. But there's less...
Yeah, I've seen that they advertise plugs for sale.
Right.
Yeah. So how close do you plant those to each other?
You want to plant them about a foot apart and then take care of it, water. It'll eventually fill in.
Yeah. And what was the other one you mentioned, the first one? Did you mention one that you plant, just plant seeds?
I don't think I did. I mentioned Bermuda grass is one of the most popular ones, yeah.
Yeah.
And there's Princess 77 is an NMSU release, and it's a beautiful Bermuda grass, and it is a seed variety.
What is it called?
Princess 77.
And where would I get that?
You can check with Guzman's and I think Horse and Hound.
Horse and Hound.
Places like that.
Okay. I'm not from Las Cruces. I'm from Silver City, so I'm not familiar with Horse and Hound.
Okay.
And what's the other one?
Guzman's Color Your World Greenhouse in Las Cruces.
Okay. All right. Okay.
All right. Thank you very much, Gail.
Yep.
All right. Let us take one more call. We've got Abby. Abby, welcome. You are on with Jeff Anderson. What's on your mind?
Yes. Yes, hello. I live on the west side of Las Cruces, West Mesa. And on the west side of my house, where it is very hot, I have some trellises, and I'm trying to grow some vines. Any that you would suggest for that side of the house?
You know, the first one that came to me that likes heat is the potato vine, sweet potato vine. And it can somewhat overwinter here if it's kept dry through the winter in a warm place. But you can take that yellow or the purple ones and you can train them up. You have to tie them up. They won't clink on their own. But you can tie them up. I've done that in the past. And they love the sun and the heat as long as there's enough water for them to keep growing.
Okay. I didn't quite hear the first word of it. The type it is.
Potato vine.
Oh, potato.
Yeah, the sweet potato vine, I should say.
Oh, sweet potato vine.
Yeah. I was just talking to somebody about potato vine versus sweet potato vine. So potato vine is solanum, and sweet potato vine is an ipomea. So, but potato vine, the other one, which is a solanum, is a much more delicate vine. It does like the heat, and it does really well here. It's really beautiful. Maybe a little difficult to locate, but it is available.
Okay. Any others? For shade on those trellises?
Coral vine. Queen's coral vine. Yeah. There's one called Baja Red that's this almost bougainvillea color. And that likes the heat as well.
Okay.
All right,
good.
All right, thank you very much for coming in.
Thank you.
All right, let us go one more call. Carol, you are on with Jeff Anderson. What's on your mind, Carol?
Well, I just wanted to let Jeff know that I live south of La Mesa, and I have wild geraniums all over the place. I started growing them in containers. Anytime the seed pods get wet, they just shoot out, and they land in the sand, and they grow.
Okay. This is not a cultivated one, I take it. More of the Crane's Bell, what they call Crane's Bell.
Well, I started off years ago. I bought some over at Color My World years ago.
Okay.
And I'm talking 5-6 years ago. And these things, they just keep on giving.
Mm-hmm.
I pull them up like weeds.
Yeah, sometimes we're blessed and we like that stuff. And sometimes we get too much of a good thing and we just want to get rid of it. So it's all a matter of perspective.
Yeah, but I just wanted to let you know they will grow in this southern area.
Okay, that's great to know.
All right. All right, Carol, thank you very much for calling in. We had a question from Silver City. We got a lot of calls from Silver City about what kind of apple trees do you recommend for Silver City?
So basically all the apple trees are going to grow up there. I would stay away from like Anna and Ein Shemmer. Those are Israeli apples. There's nothing wrong with the apple. It's just that they only need 100 hours of chilling for the winter, and we get more than that. But that also means that they're going to start blooming at the beginning of February, and we don't want that because then they'll get hit by the frost. So any apple that really suits your taste buds, whether it's delicious and sweet or Granny Smith and tart or a Pink Lady, which is wonderful as well.
All right. Thank you very much to all of you that called in. Let's have a drawing. This is legit because we're live on Facebook. I'm going to shake it up. And Jeff Anderson, we're going to do two drawings. For one $25 gift card and another $25 gift card to Guzman's Color Your World. Let us see if we got phone or social media.
That's one.
All right. He can't win. All right. Mary on Facebook. Thank you very much, Mary. Congratulations. And Andrew. Andrew and Mary, congratulations. You are the winners of the $25 gift card to Guzman's Color Your World. Thank you very much for asking your questions. Got two more minutes to go, Jeff. Let's talk about real quickly about, you mentioned some good shade trees. What's another good shade tree for our area?
I happen to like the lacebark elm. There we go. Lacebark elm. So it's easily available. It's different than an oak, or it's different than some of the other ones, the pistaches that we talked about. So it'll give you this umbrella-type canopy. It's nice for a patio. It's pretty clean. It'll drop its leaves in the fall, and that's about it. But it has this bark that peels and flakes off. It looks all lacy, and it's a beautiful, beautiful tree.
I've been curious about planting a pecan tree.
Mm-hmm.
How much water does a pecan tree require, and is it realistic to have a pecan tree?
Having a pecan tree, a lot depends on where you live. So they require about 60 inches of water a year. They're a high water user.
Okay.
They're a big tree. They can be brittle. They get a lot of insects and honeydew. So if you had one and you planted it where you park your car and your house is at, the honeydew is going to fall on it, and then that'll get sooty mold, which is a fungus growing on it, and then your house and your car would be all covered in sugar and black, and that's not enjoyable for most people.
So I should stick with my pomegranate that I want to plant.
I didn't plant a pecan. I buy my pecans from the store.
All right, that makes sense. Jeff Anderson, I want to thank you very much for joining
thank
us.
You.
Looking forward to the fall edition
thank
of KRWG's Gardening Confidential. KRWG's Gardening Confidential was produced and hosted by me, Edmundo Resendez. Jeff Anderson with the Cooperative Extension Service was our guest. Michael Kaczmarek worked the social media desk. Jacob Lockwood handled phones and is our technical producer. Also had help from Manny, who helped out, Manny Gutierrez. Thank you for tuning in. If you missed the part of the show, we will upload it in just a bit on krwg.org, and you can listen to it. Thank you very much.
Thank you.